I'm Sam. I'm from New Zealand / Australia, apparently. If you guys can't understand me or figure out what the hell I'm saying, just yell out. I think the Kiwi accent is quite hard for people. So I work for a place in Wellington called Lateral Security. Basically hack for a living. It's all sorts of government and big banks and all that sort of thing. It's quite a fun job actually. But also got an office up in Auckland. So I was planning on doing all three of those CART, PSync and SASync thing, but basically ran out of time on SASync thing. And so it's probably better to do the two topics better than the two, not so great. I imagine basically the recommendations I've given here are probably quite similar for you say 60 without actually having to look into it. So CARP's the Common Address Redundancy Protocol, and basically, for those of you who don't know, it basically gives you the ability to share IPs among two or more CARP nodes, and it appeared in OpenBSD roughly around 2003-2004, somewhere around the area. It does other stuff, you can do output balancing and things like that with it. But I'm just going to kind of focus on the IP sharing. I first got into this kind of HA stuff when I was about to leave my last work and thought, how can I hack them? And so I started looking into the RP and eventually moved from that to CARP because of the history on that. So anyways, basically all that you see on the wire from the CARP is this packet structure, only the active master advertisers. I won't explain all the things in here, but basically the VPIC is essentially it's a virtual host ID. It's basically a way of virtualizing the, so you can have multiple CARP groups in the same network. It's I guess, analogous to VPNs, for example. And ads advertise for ADP SKU and ADP base. They're basically put together to perform the timing operations. The counter fields, which is actually a single 64-bit int, is replay protection, which I'll talk a bit more about later, and the HMAC cache is actually just one SHA-1 HMAC cache of a packet, and I'll see if I got that set. As I mentioned, only the active master either advertises. Other than that, the backups just sit there until they need to basically become masters. And it's all multicast basically. And by default, a master mode will submit a packet every 1 second as a heartbeat packet. So in terms of security, the main thing is a shared key, and then from the shared key, which is shared between the CARP nodes, you basically it creates a HMAC hash of that key as a in a pad, and then it includes all these other fields within the packet. And so
basically, we can see a card packet, you have all of this information except the secret key, and this supports your valid card point. So in terms of the attacks, I spent probably around about a week or something like this looking into it, and I found a bug which I mentioned full disclosure, originally to the BSDs first, where you can, by capturing the active master and then replaying that back, there's two fields, the advertisement base and the advertisement skew fields. When a master steps down, or a voluntarily steps down, it will set those values to 255, and then one of the backups will see it and basically assume the master role. So what you can do is, since those fields aren't actually included in the checksum, or sorry, the HMAP hash and packet, you can capture a packet from the current master, update those fields to 255 to make it look like it's going to voluntarily stand you down, and send that in another box, one of the backup nodes will pick it up, and you become master, you capture that. And then by replaying both packets, you can actually, according to all of the card nodes, there'll be two masters, and so none of them are actually masters.
The skew and base, they're not included in the checksum?
The question was, is the skew base included in the checksum? The skew and base is in the checksum, but it's not in the HMAC hash. And from memory, the HMAC hash, so the checksum is zero with the HMAC hash, and then calculated, and then the hash is put in. I'll show you a quick demo of this. You can't actually see the lines there, but there's some lines, and it's just, I've got two open BSD, look at the latest 4.8, I think, and then my laptop, it's all virtualized for them. Yeah, just one second.
So everyone can see that, roughly?
Okay.
Can you tell us which window is going to be what?
Sure. Yep.
was the top window, basically the top and bottom are two separate machines. The top one, as you can see, the third line down, it's master, the cart master. And then the bottom one is the backup one.
What command did you run to get that output?
That is just iConfig that's looping around. iConfig that's just looping around refreshing
it. So the cart information is going to be included in iConfig.
In what, sorry?
iConfig?
Yeah, yep. It just comes up as an interface like anything else. So basically the thing to watch here is the top one will become a backup, the bottom one will become a master, and then they'll both become backups. So now you basically, there's my machines answering up for that virtual IP, and at this point you can either basically leave it like that and no traffic flows, or you can take over the IP. And while you can definitely fight basically active masters for ARP, this way you're guaranteed to get all the traffic and start answering. Any questions on that one?
Are you continuously sending a hard
drive for the attacking machine at this point? Yeah, basically, it goes, captures the first master, captures the second master, and then replays both packets over and over and over. And now, one of them will step back up to the second master. So basically that's that. I had a chat to the BSCs originally, and it was some talk about getting it fixed. I basically got shot down by Theo, that's kind of to be expected, right? And anyways, I guess people probably not interested or don't see it as a huge problem, and fair enough. Some potential ways to kind of work around this, from an administrative point of view, running authentication via IPsec, running CARP over that's probably reasonable, because in that fact that you've got replay counters and some other IPsec magic. A very simple fix about this one, in terms of a code fix, it will break backwards compatibility, but is to include all of the fields in the SHA-1 hash, which I'm actually surprised that it doesn't happen that way at the moment, and who knows why. But I did write a patch for PFSync guys to do that, and hasn't quite made it in yet. I think I'm quite busy, guys. Another thing that I'd like to do from a code perspective is, if you couple the, I mean, there's no reason why advertisements need to go out in the same interface that the virtual IP is being shared on. It's like that at the moment, but there's no solid reason. So I think it would be actually quite nice if you've got a spare interface, certainly if you're running PFSync as well, because it's quite common to come PFSync together.
I'm sorry, go ahead, you're about to
finish. Basically, you just decoupling it so you can have the advertisements go over a private interface that isn't on the same network.
What about sending that over to two interfaces over before we're done, say?
Over two interfaces? I'm not sure that would.
Why would you do that? Is it weird? You mean like FaceTime? You mean like a trunk interface?
No, he's saying decoupling of the advertisements for who's master. Basically, you can send it over a private network. So, if I were in an enterprise environment, I would want multiple networks doing it.
Really, the only thing that would give you is more places to attack it from?
Well,
Well, if they're private, if they're a crossover or segmented on their own VLANs, no, that's not the case. You said it's decoupled, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so why not send it over this, the PFSync interface, as far as that goes?
Okay, PFSync will be bound to a real interface or virtual one. But basically, the idea is, I think what you're getting at is the PFSync most likely be going over a private interface, so TARP should be going over there as well. Is that?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, if you've got it going over a dedicated interface, then you've got more sophisticated requirements, right? Like you're doing ARM balancing over a number of machines and you plug into a switch from the car. If you're doing it this way, well, if you wanted the redundancy of the switching, you could lag the interfaces and start getting taking the complexity in another place in the stack, right? I mean, essentially what you're talking about is just an interface, binding to an interface for the car.
Isn't part of the reason why this goes over the interface as being CARP is to discover when the CARP interface is
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Basically, the question was, is the reason that these go over the interface where the actual IP has been balanced is not by design. I mean, sorry, by design, yes, but there's no reason. The only reason that you need the advertisements is to obviously the heartbeat part of it. And so as long as all your CARP nodes are connected to the same network, there's no reason it needs to be on this one, and it could be on the other one.
Well, you could have an async together. When that backend number drops out, they're going to, you know, in turn start trying to assume master role, so that has an actual effect on the line.
Yes, that's
definitely. Oh, okay.
Yeah. But, that's a good point. Part of the issue with the protocol is that it's got a built-in replay protection, but the nodes aren't synced, and if they were synced, then the bug that I found takeover thing would actually not work because the checks in the code to make sure that the counters aren't what it basically checks the counters. So if they were synced, it would do that. But obviously, keeping multiple boxes in sync is actually a reasonably complex problem in itself, and probably not worth pushing into the tree, or even trying really. Another possibility is to make the step down of masters a bit more strict. For example, master shouldn't necessarily step down if it's told to step down. It should only step down if you send a root prompt or whatever. So yeah. Also, I don't know you guys, but the IPsec documentation for doing, for example, authentication header-only stuff is not straightforward. It takes a little while, but so maybe some Docker update. I'm not sure. So that kind of finishes up CARP for me. Move on to PFSync. This is actually, PFSync is very cool when it does in sharing networking states between multiple wires. It's a very cool thing. Basically, it came in before CARP, which is kind of interesting. So you've got state sharing, the no failover mechanism, at least they're rolling something else on top of it. I'm not sure.
Which one was that?
Basically, PFSync came in a few years before CARP even made it, and so I'm not sure what people did to fail over boxes before that. So basically all packets are multicast to that.
They did not come 3 years apart. I can tell you, because first of all, PF wasn't introduced until the BSD until 2.0. And each release is 6 months apart.
So can you
repeat that? Sync and CARB will release it, then one release to each other.
Okay, this is based on the release of Open BSD. Also, the range uses copyright in color.
That sounds more like essay sync than BSD. It could just be code, that's why they copyright.
I'm not sure, but from the release notes, I got the impression that BSD was definitely released before CARB. Yeah, so basically, all done in the protocol is multicast. Even if a box requests something, another box will reply to it. Instead of replying directly to the request, that it will actually multicast it to the multicast group, club, whatever. And basically, it's as expected, a fairly complex protocol because of just syncing things is a tough problem. And you've got computer science people pumping out PhDs and all that sort of thing on the subject. This top header, the PSync header, is there's one of those in every single PSync packet. Basically, the only thing you really need to worry about here is the length, which is the whole entire length of all the sub-packets and everything, and then the checksum, the header checksum, which is actually a checksum of the rule set of the sending device. There's a bunch of things that runs through the producer. And then the sub-sections of the packet are in the order of PSync, sub-header, and the action header, for example. If it's an insert that we can insert with all the data, the states, and that sort of thing. You really can't see the lines very well on this. Anyways, that kind of fluffy cloud up there, that's multicast. That's, I don't know how to represent that. But anyway, so the left-hand firewall. When you stand that up, it will start sending these update request packets into the multicast group, and it will just keep spamming them until basically some device answers it. And so it will basically, when a box gets one of these update requests, it will create a bulk update status to the box or through multicast, and they'll often be spanned over four or five packets, even with a very small amount of states. And there's basically a start header to it and an endpoint, and it just basically does it. And then when the right-hand firewall is in there and it receives an update request from a new one, it'll actually update the status itself from the original requester, so that now in sync with each other, basically. State insertion is actually very simple. Assume that's a laptop connecting some website server under firewall or something like that. All that happens is the firewall that gets the connection created on it pushes it into the multicast cloud, and the box is listening, basically just push it in. And so it's just a one-way thing, basically. Kind of a bit of a problem that you can't see the lines in here, but updating is a slightly more complex problem. Basically, it checks whether it has state, and if it doesn't, it requests it, and does the bulk update status thing. And if it does, it updates it, and collects everything. It's just kind of, it's probably one of the most complicated actions within it. State deletion, like insertion, is just a one-off, just send the packet and the state dies on all firewalls that receive the packet. You might not be able to read that, but basically it says it's completely clear, unencrypted, over the wire, and all those sorts of good things. So there's no security within PSync itself. which is problematic given what we're actually transporting. But if you pump this over a private network, not so bad, but if this is over your public network with a bunch of servers that might get hacked or dot, then it's potentially a problem.
What's the actual threat model on that? Because someone has to be local, right, to sniff that traffic, right? But also, I mean, any other firewall, commercial or otherwise, is going to have the same issue, right?
Often there will be some sort of crypto mechanism, some shared key, something like that.
You're not particular
about it, right? There's often some sort of shared key, which is some crypto hashes set up, and so there's some sort of encryption over the protocol, usually. And here it's not being set. But you're right, you do have to be on the same layer, so either that or sitting behind the same switch and are able to hop packets into the network, for example, which is possible.
But most people aren't going through a switch if they just have two car boxes. I mean, they have two boxes to cross over to serial, right? I mean,
sure. If you're crossed over, then you, as an attacker, unless you hack the firewall, you can't get at it. And if you hack the firewall, someone's not going to touch a car because they've got roof on the firewall, pointless. But
there's an exception. If you're stupid enough not to filter PFSync on the other interfaces, then those firewalls wouldn't send the audience.
Yeah.
But then you get a user.
If you can think of a way to do it wrong, it's out there. Doing the job for, 3 years, it's every possible awesomely bad edge case you could think of in terms of security. You've seen it. That's entertaining. So, basically, if you can get a PFSync, assume that's going on some local network or something like that, if you can see the data, you can basically do anything that the firewall can do. Probably one of the main ones of that is a firewall bypass, because obviously with a stateful firewall, if it has a state that matches the packet that you're throwing into the box, it won't even traverse the firewall also. I mean, that's the whole kind of efficiency of stateful firewalls and things like that. You can also DOS, you can delete or update, say, TCP into the file pass where they're meant to be, and kill connections and just be a general nuisance. I've got a question mark on the last one, the potential code exec and things like that. Given how complex PFSync is, and the fact that you move from PFSync into the PF, basically the harder to run the kernel, you can actually, there's a lot of, I guess, attack surface. I haven't looked at that, I haven't really had the time so far, but it's certainly a way that there's a lot to play with there. So I'll do another couple of demos with PFSync, and I should take off.
Yeah.
So basically, I've set up a PSync interface on both of the machines on two top that opened the first box, and I can't remember if it was anything right at the top of the volume. Anyway, basically, so the 1 second. So basically, what it does is left and right are the two separate machines. You can't really see it very well because it's a huge font, but it's basically PFCTL minus CCR, BB minus S states, and it just splits out a list of all the states that are in the file there. And this includes the states that are shared between each other. And basically, if I create a bunch of SSH connections just to populate the boxes that I'll see quickly. Yeah, basically, you know, I've got SSH in the box a couple of times then, and some of the new sessions came up. Basically, I just wrote a quick script that will remove the states from both of the files. You really can't see it that well at all. That killed the SSH sessions I just created before. The ones that you can see here that are multicast. For both CART and PFSync. Basically, so that shows that if you can get onto that network, you can delete the states from any or all firewalls. So I'll show you a firewall bypass now. And that's 1 second. Basically, if you look at the right hand side, the very bottom rule of pf.conf, it just a simple setup. It's just blocks any UDP coming into the box on port 5000. It's just a, just a simple demo rule, basically. So basically, that top one is just listening on UDP port 5000 on the firewall. The bottom right hand is TCP dumping the EFL interface, which if you set it up, will log drop packets to that interface. So if I send some packets in on port 5000 UDP, it will come up there and that's blocked. So firewall is done to go and block it. So that's without the state sitting there. Now I'll just run my script. So basically you just push in the state that says allow UDP 5000 from the IP of my laptop. So if I run that command, now the top screen has now accepted the packet. So what that says is, for example, if you can touch pfSync, you can, talk to ACMP, for example, or something like that. TCP is a bit harder because obviously it's stateful. You can UDP is easy because you just pump the packets in and you're done. Basically TCP is a hard problem. It's something I'll have a look at in the future. I'm not sure if it will work or not, but we'll see. Any questions on that?
Have you done anything, or is there any work you know of basically people working with different types of, maliciously crafted packets to basically bypass the firewall by going through openly and somehow basically traversing backwards or doing something terrible to you?
Basically hacking firewalls from a...
Bouncing around between networks.
Yeah, there's been a lot of research into that sort of area many years ago.
Has everybody forgotten?
Network hacking was big about probably 10 years ago, and it's kind of picked off now with applications and more producer stuff you can get there. But there's certainly people still trying to do that sort of thing. But also these days there's much bigger vendors in the game, like that stake their reputation of being secure and stuff. So, yeah. But if you check out Frack, do you know Frack magazine? Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff in there, just stuff everywhere basically.
Still around?
Frack?
Yeah.
Yeah, still going strong. So in terms of the fixes for this one from an administrative point of view is cross it over. If you can't get it for the traffic, then you can't do anything, which is obviously a good thing. If you can't cross these over, for example, you have 3 or 5 or 10 or 4, whatever, pfSync nodes, your layer 2 security actually really matters in a sense, because if, for example, I can relay hot packets through a switch into the private network, you know, I'm sitting on the network and this will happily, single packets will happily do a lot of damage in pfSync itself. I'm guessing, is Cisco really good over here? Yeah, they've got some reasonable security set up in their switches and all that sort of thing. Probably the best one here, and potentially even if it's over the private interface, or probably not, but is full IPsec, crypto, AH, everything running pfSync over the top of it. Part of why it's good to actually encrypt it is you don't really want people to see who's talking to what boxes, for example. So you just crypto the lock and you're good to go. A potential one is having a shared secret kind of packet hashing scheme similar to CARP. I'm not sure why it's not there. And potentially a security section of man pages. Often some man pages have security sections, but a lot of them don't. For example, alias, all that sort of crap. You don't need security for that. Yes. But anything in, say, you know, the four section or anything that has a daemon, it's actually handy as a sysadmin or someone who's playing around to actually see what you can do and how to protect it and things like that. I know I would have, when I've been sysadmin in the past, would have, that would have been very handy. Has anyone ever mentioned that before, that sort of thing, or talked about having a security section specifically in man pages? This is kind of an aside. I help organize a conference back home in New Zealand. It's a hacking conference. It's dirt cheap. It's $50 for a weekend. And it's
$12,000 in a flight.
That's the problem. It's $50. But if anyone is interested in this sort of hacking stuff, or just general geek, this sort of conference really appeals. And often there's one in Australia called RoxCon, and they're often very close, so you're paying however many thousands of dollars to come over. You could do two security cons and be run for months afterwards. Yeah, but keep contact with all of you interested. And that's my questions.